Hour number three of Three and Out kicks off with this segment brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Check them out online at tvacreditunion.com or just walk into one of over 20 branches. Tell them you heard about them right here on Fan Run Radio. They can set you up as a member, and boy, do they take care of their members. They help you grow financially. They'll help you move upward and forward with the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. All the services of a bank right now, big time deals on home loans as it is buying and selling season in the real estate market. So check them out online at tvacreditunion.com for more info, and then just walk in and talk to the great people at the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Chris says, imagine being Georgia during this Clemson-Bama run.
That's a good point by Chris.
I mean,
you were talking about, like, maybe it's better to be bad while these two teams are just dominating. I mean, that's a good point. I don't know what hurts worse.
It's like Auburn kicking that ball away. It's like, yeah, you won your first-round game, and then you just got your gut tripped out of you.
I mean,
like, what if Kirby never gets it done? Like, never wins another even SEC championship. Like, maybe gets to the game again, but doesn't. Like, no more real big-time trophies.
That's fair. But celebrating big wins in the season's fun.
It is fun.
But, yeah, I would, knowing how rare it is for non-Alabama / Clemson teams to get to that point and have a chance, they've now squandered two. That would feel pretty bad.
Well, you mentioned celebrating wins in the season, though. I mean, the Drive asked the question yesterday, do you celebrate those big wins Butch Jones had? Do you still feel...
I'm saying at the time.
Do you still feel... Okay. So it's a timing thing. It's still fun in the moment.
Right.
Okay.
Like, winning 10 games in a season is way more fun that season than winning four.
Matt. Yes.
That's what I mean.
Let me think about it.
But if you're wanting to talk about all-time great teams, to get that close 2 years in a row and to not get it done and to lose in the heartbreaking fashion that Georgia has, I mean, overtime, what was it, 40 yards? To lose a national championship game and then a fake punt, can't guard the backup quarterback to win the SEC title. And then you watch, you know, your season kind of unfold after that with another loss to Tech. Those are bad. That's bad. See, that's the thing. I don't know what's worse, to have, like, mediocre expectations that aren't met, or to think you're going to win a national championship and get to the doorstep of it 2 years in a row and then not get it done. I really don't know what's worse. Because that final loss for Georgia, well, maybe not this last year, maybe not the loss to Texas, but like that loss to Alabama in the SEC championship game, I promise that hurt them way more than us losing to Vanderbilt. I promise.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. The higher the stakes are, the more it hurts.
Right, so that's an interesting point. Maybe being bad when you're bad isn't that bad, considering how horrible it would be to be good enough to get there and not good enough to win it. It's like, oh, man. If you're Georgia and you're thinking, if we had had this team 4 years ago, we're the champs. And if we have it in 4 years from now, we're probably the champs. But can you do that? Is it lightning in a bottle, or is Kirby about to just run the show and be that team that does finally get over the hump in the next few years?
Yeah, it could be.
I don't know.
I mean, because I've always thought you just want to give yourself as many chances as possible.
But that's the thing about chances. Like, you don't know you're going to get another one. But right. You know now, if you're Georgia, you've had two.
Yeah.
And a lot of teams don't get two chances.
It gets Buffalo Bills pretty quick. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, exactly.
And the more you start worrying about it, the more it becomes a problem.
Yeah, it festers and grows, time. Right?
Yep. We promised you some updates on some players. Jesse.
Yeah, what do we got?
Simonton earlier this week talked about how there's no resolution for D'Angelo Gibbs or Aubrey Solomon yet, and apparently there still isn't. Which seems really, really odd.
Like, it does.
Tate Martell says, oh, I'm happy with where I'm at. Oh, wait, no, I'm not happy. I'm leaving. And the reason I left was because of this and that, and he's like immediately good to go at quarterback for Miami. And we have a defensive lineman and a DB or wide receiver. It doesn't really matter. Like, can't even get an answer.
Right.
And what takes so long? Like, their situation isn't changing. Everything's been filed. Why does it take months for someone to read an application and stamp it approved or disapproved?
Maybe they're just backed up. I mean, there's a lot of guys in the transfer portal.
There are a lot of transfers.
Maybe the reason that so many got done so quickly was they were early to the game. And now the transfer portal's just clogged.
Oh.
We got a clog in the portal.
Yeah.
You hate to see the clogged portal. That's one of the topics at SEC meetings this week.
Mm.
And I'm sure all conferences will discuss it. Because it's weird because I think I'm pro player
movement, freedom of movement.
Yeah, like power. Yeah. Like I want the players to have a little bit more power.
Some leverage.
In this game. Yeah, leverage, yeah. Power makes it seem a little bit negative. But yeah, yeah. Leverage. But I do wonder if the transfer portal, like the people who sat and made that decision that the transfer portal could be a thing, are they sitting back right now saying, yeah, we expected this. It's not that bad. Or are they like, oh no. Oh my God. There's 500 kids in the transfer portal. I mean, you got Herm Edwards saying, you know, I can't fill my roster because guys are transferring away. Like, it's like I think the transfer portal in its infancy is a good idea, but I don't think they really thought outside the box of just they can enter the transfer portal and transfer.
There's no spots for them to go. It's like,
right.
The transfer portal is one way.
So it's like, it's weird.
It's a one way street with a dead end.
Well, it gave the players power and leverage, but it also took away a safety net.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, hey, yeah, you have the freedom of movement now. You can do whatever you want. But you're not guaranteed to go anywhere. And if you enter the transfer portal, some of your coaches won't let you go back. And if you have 12 players transfer away, coach, you still can't sign more or gain more transfers in the next class to make up for it. These seem like things you should have thought about if you're the NCAA. So I'm wondering now, again, as I mentioned with alcohol sales and other things like that, can the SEC come up with some type of idea, some type of plan in this meeting where they can present to the NCAA and perhaps other conferences and say, here's a better idea. And then you have a list of, if you're under the 85 limit, a transfer should not count as a scholarship in your recruiting class to the 20 number. It should only count towards the 85.
Yeah.
Things like that. That's interesting to me. But it is good news, I guess, that Tennessee doesn't have any one else transferring away. I feel like
we need to create some spots.
But then we couldn't fill them.
Well, I think we might be over 85 right now. I don't know. I mean,
surely not. I mean, you're not. You cannot give more than 85 scholarships.
Well,
so if someone's here on scholarship, they're either not getting the money or they are because someone that we think is getting it is not. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is for the next 25 to come in, we're going to have to lose some because the senior class.
Well, you got 35 juniors, so you might only have to wait a year.
Yeah, but what was the senior class? 9 kids? So if you're at 85 right now and you only lose 9, you can only.
Was it 9? Is that what I said?
I thought so.
It was like 9 or 11, something like that. It was a low number.
So that's where.
But and you'll have some. I mean, yeah. Some of those juniors will, you know, they'll transfer, go pro, or they'll, just decide to retire from football or something. That seems to be happening a lot lately.
Well, a redshirt freshman's back in action, Houston. Are you excited?
Maybe. Who
Big
is it?
Big position of need. J.J. Peterson. Apparently got the shoulder all, cut on.
Did we even know
away.
It was the shoulder?
No.
From lifting all those tacos while he was doing his academic work.
China food.
So J.J. Peterson's healthy. He's going to be going through summer workouts in fall camp, we think. How about that?
I don't know.
Big J.J. Peterson.
We just now know it was a shoulder.
Okay.
So there we go.
That's something.
It's been cut on and
cleaned
up or something.
Yeah.
Some procedure has been done. So we still don't know about our transfers. J.J. Peterson is back. And then we're back in with Ebony Jackson. Did you see the picture?
I did. So he decommits, then tweets out a picture of him in a Tennessee uniform saying, I love y'all. And then says that Tennessee is still one of his top schools. That he was just mad about the broken arm thing.
Well, yeah, he's a little just upset.
Hurt.
That it was kind of like you in the ranking quarterbacks segment a few minutes ago. It wasn't might
have overreacted.
It wasn't
I still
really
love you guys.
About
I still
that.
Love. I still love you, Tennessee.
Okay,
you're my alma mater. I still.
It sounds like he was listening to the show because remember I said if I'm Ebony, I'm pumped that they left the game because they only wanted to see me.
Yeah. I got hurt and they dipped.
That's a good point
because
by
they
you, Billy.
Love me.
So now he probably heard me. Now he's like, oh yeah, maybe I need to go back to Tennessee. To
apparently this. he wanted to take some other visits, but he felt like it was wrong
to be committed and do
to
that.
To be committed and take other visits. Maybe this guy's just
maybe he gets it
more loyal than the norm.
But if you commit and then decommit to go on visits, I don't think that's loyal.
That's a good point. Good point by you, Houston.
Loyalty would be I'm committed and I'm not taking visits.
Does Clemson still let their guys take visits once they're committed? Because that used to be
no,
their
they
thing.
Don't. If you're committed to Clemson, you don't visit. Which is weird. Like, what if I'm a 5-star defensive end and I take a visit? Are you going to take my scholarship away, Dabo?
Probably.
He's like, yeah, I got plenty more lined up. Maybe he's a bad example.
I think that happens, and the sites leave them on as committed, but I think what Clemson is saying is if you're visiting other schools, we may use your offer somewhere else. You may still have it.
No guarantees at that point.
There's no guarantees.
If you stay committed and don't visit, it's a guarantee?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that's the way I would do it.
Is it, though? Well, is it a guarantee?
Depends on who you are.
2-star guarantee? That's the thing. Like, yeah. Maybe they don't take his commitment in the first place.
Right.
Any other interesting news in the
I think that's
news
about
and notes?
It. Ebony Jackson had said that he had been trending away from to decommit for a while. It wasn't just the whole coaches leaving the thing.
So he
which kind of goes against what he said in his direct quotes in an article.
And it's what some other people surmised and said, this is a convenient excuse.
Okay. Right. Yep. Seems to be the
the maybe he's a loyal guy, Nate. Good call on that one. Jeez.
That's all that's funny.
You missed.
All the news and notes for today. We'll come back and bounce around a little bit. Hour 3, Friday edition of 3 and Out. Welcome back into the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. SEC meetings coming up. All the stuff on the docket. Some things that have been similar, scheduling.
What all coaches
revenue.
Go to this? Is it football? Men's and women's basketball?
I didn't even know this was a thing. I'll be honest, until 2 years ago. Like, I never even...
It was a thing. It's getting more coverage because they're turning everything into 365
event,
days.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's going to be a big deal. This will probably be a televised thing in the next 5 years, I'd say. They'll turn it into SEC Media Day Lite.
Yeah.
But the point of this is it's not a media spectacle. It really is it's supposed to be at least kind of closed door meetings, mm-hmm. meeting of the minds type stuff. But I mean, this is actually when a lot of the sweeping decisions get made. I mean, Media Days is just, hey, come talk about your team. There's really no news. This is where the news comes from, is meetings like this. And so I find it pretty dang interesting. But I guess maybe that's just me. I don't know if the common fan cares at all about these big decisions and before they're made.
Yeah.
Or if, I mean, I tweet out something about in-stadium alcohol sales and the replies are like, well, what? Is it what? Like, that seems like a no-brainer. But it's also the SEC. And that one, we probably should be first, but we'll be last. Apparently, LSU has been like...
begging for it.
They have been blowing the horn for in-stadium alcohol sales for a decade. And, of course, the SEC, the presidents, athletic directors are all, just don't think it's a good idea. I don't really know why. I mean, We're just now getting to the point where they're going to allow beer sales in Thompson Bowling Arena for a concert. We're like a year away from that, I think. Next January, they're supposed to start doing that.
So Purdue actually sells alcohol in their stadium. And in 2017, they generated...
You need a lot of it to watch Purdue football.
They generated close to $600,000.
And that's Purdue.
On revenue, yeah.
I'm just saying, like, that's $600,000 in revenue or profit?
Says revenue. But like you said, Purdue, I mean, how many?
I figured it'd be way more than that. Mm. $600,000 in revenue?
Mm-hmm.
That, all right.
And
they only sold 100,000 beers? How many beers do you think you'd sell in Neyland Stadium on the home opener?
They had six home games.
And we'd have seven this year. I'm just saying, like, let's say it's $6 a beer. If that's the revenue number, then that means they sold 100,000 beers.
For the whole season? Seems low.
That's what I'm saying. It seems very low. Was it a limited area of sales?
I bet it was.
It said it was only in two different places. So.
Okay, so that's very different.
Like two stands. Yeah, if you had it in every concession.
Yeah, if you walk up to the top of your stair, you know, and it's like popcorn, water, Coke, beer, or margarita, whatever.
If you get the beer guy like walking through the sections, that's
it's
the best
over.
Thing.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think at a place like Neyland, they sold 100,000. Again, we're saying $6 a beer just to make that number easy.
Like you'd sell like 60,000 to 80,000 a game.
A game, right?
Yeah,
that may be a little high, but I mean, I think you're selling more than 30,000 beers a game.
I mean, the average person that buys beer at all is probably buying on average what, like 1.5? Because you're gonna have a lot of people that just buy one, but then you're gonna have the people that buy like 3.
Right. I would say so. And then what percentage of your...
So if half the people buy 1.5 beers on average, you're at 75,000-ish.
Per game?
Per game, yeah.
And who...
Eight games.
I mean, I don't know what the typical payout is on a... I mean, if you bought beer...
I don't know that they'd be $6. They'd probably be like $8.50.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I have no idea.
Yeah.
It just made the 600,000 easy to say $6. I mean, a $5... You know, draft beer at a restaurant is not outrageous if it's something decent. But yeah, I'm with you. You'd probably charge like 7 or 8. I mean, that just seems like easy money to me. But, and was it West Virginia that did it? And then they proved that there's actually less violence, less alcohol related issues when you sell beer in the stadium because people aren't having to, they're not having to chug their mixed drink right before they walk into the stadium. They're not having to sneak it in and, like, quickly drink 2 airplane bottles to feel good. So you have people who now know, hey, I can just walk in, grab a beer, keep it rolling, and we're good. That's an interesting one to me. You talk about in-stadium experience. That seems like an easy fix. I don't know if that's a liability issue. Like, does the insurance cost just go up so much that they don't even want to have to deal with it? Do they just not care? Is it too much of a hassle? I'm interested as to why... I mean, you don't have to install a tap system. It doesn't have to be draft beers. You could say just plastic bottles, and we're going to open them and take the lid from you.
Yep.
Because I doubt they'll do cans unless you open it first. But they don't want anything that could be a projectile, which is why everybody – well, a lot
what
of –
what were they doing in Charlotte? Didn't they have the like kind of the tall cans with the screw on, and they just took the lid off?
Right. I think that's what it was, like the super light aluminum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But ideally – and I understand that. You want to limit what people can throw, which is why a draft – system actually makes more sense because a big cup, you can't throw a cup full of beer and it go anywhere except all over the person in front of you. Hopefully you wouldn't want to do that.
Purdue's attendance that year was only 47,000.
Per game?
Mm-hmm.
Still. It's still a really weird number.
But yeah. but that was only 2 spots, remember?
No.
So you could double the attendance plus, I mean, so, and then if you added more stations, you're looking at at UT, like probably like $1.8 million in revenue, I would think.
Right.
Like that, pushing 2.
So probably more.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know if anything will happen. I do think that that's a.
Like, why is the SEC opposed to it at all? Like, I don't know.
Well,
is it just Bible Belt stuff?
It's the schools. It's the SEC because a lot of the presidents don't want it on campus. And so the SEC just said, okay, well, if you guys don't want it, then nobody can have it. Like, they kind of did the whole thing, like the kids fighting over the toy and you just take the toy away. That's what this is. Because LSU is like, we want it, we want it, we want it, we want it. Give it to us, please, now. And then probably, like, I don't know, Mississippi State's president is, no, we do not want alcohol on our campus. Tennessee might be one of those also, considering how stingy they've been about all that for years. And so... I wish they would just kind of release it to the schools and say, you guys can make your own decision, and whatever extra money you make, but whatever extra liability comes with that, extra issues, you got it. Just seems like an easy one. Again, talking about in-stadium experience.
This article has Texas netting $1.3 million in sales in 2017.
What is their sections like? Is that stadium-wide? See, because like you can at the world's largest outdoor party or whatever they call it now.
Yeah.
That is, I mean, obviously that's at Jacksonville, so they can sell all the beer that they would at an NFL game there. So, I guess the schools probably split some of that, right? So I'm guessing Georgia and Florida probably make a lot of money, a lot of, well, maybe not a lot, but a nice extra bump when they play that game, because, you know, you get half the ticket sales and then you're probably getting half of the alcohol split of, you know, splitting whatever the share is with the stadium, with the vendor, so on and so forth. So that's a loophole. And apparently Florida gets a beer garden somewhere for some games, but I think that's one of those special section type things. But that's going to be on the docket. My guess is nothing probably happens. The other one now, and it comes up every year, SEC scheduling.
Yeah.
This is funny. So apparently there are two games that many think are holding the rest of the league hostage.
Oh.
It is Auburn, Georgia, which is now potentially being moved to earlier in the year, and Alabama, Tennessee. Apparently those are the only two cross-division games that anyone really cares about, which is the Deep South's oldest rivalry, Georgia-Auburn, and the third Saturday in October, which is Tennessee-Alabama. I don't want to lose it. Particularly, I don't know that I would be devastated if it went away. I think that's back when it was super competitive all the time, people liked it. And now that it's not, I think the longer we wait, the easier it becomes to switch those two off. Except Georgia-Auburn, frankly, because that's been a really good game lately. But the problem is, like, I don't think the SEC is going to go to 9 games. It would be obviously a lot easier if they did.
Yeah.
As far as the fairness of playing everybody and trying to make the schedules kind of match up year to year. But now you've got, and I don't know if the SEC likes this or not, now you've got the SEC scheduling big time. I mean, you've got, you know, Clemson and A&M. You've got Auburn and Clemson. I mean, all of these schools now, with the exception of Alabama, who just went and got South Florida for a three-game series.
They are going to go there.
It's South Florida, not Central Florida.
I know, but they are going to go there.
Charlie Strong, good luck, buddy.
Yeah.
But the majority, I mean, Tennessee's obviously going to get Oklahoma, Georgia, Notre Dame. Like, teams are filling that ninth spot, if you will, with a decent out-of-conference opponent. So I don't know that that really changes. I mean, the SEC doesn't really need help as far as playing a tougher schedule. And especially if you went to 9, and maybe that's part of it. Maybe if they go to 9, they know they're never going to get these out-of-conference games that matter.
Would you rather see that? Would you rather see 9 conference games? And
no, I wouldn't. Like, I don't need a Bama-Missouri bonus game when I could get Bama-Florida State. I mean, I know that game sucked. I'm just saying, like, I would rather see Georgia go to Notre Dame, welcome Notre Dame, than get Georgia-Arkansas as a bonus game. Now, sure, some years it would be cool, right? A year where Florida has to play LSU, Mississippi State, and now they get Alabama too, the way the draw sets up. Like that, yeah, I'd love that.
I was going to say, talk about Tennessee. Like, would you rather them pick up Ole Miss and then drop Oklahoma for 2020?
Well, yeah, that year. But then there's probably going to be a year where we have to play LSU, Auburn, and Alabama, and I'm out. Right? Like, that becomes cyclical, and you have no choice over it. I would much rather have the choice of going out of conference and getting who I want for that. I'm saying ninth game as in ninth big game, because I think we all agree SEC games have varying levels of quote-unquote bigness, but they're an SEC game, so it matters. And the majority of these schools are scheduling at least one other pretty big game. But who this would really hurt if they go to 9 SEC games is Florida, is South Carolina, because Florida already has Florida State. I know they stink right now, but typically good. And South Carolina has Clemson every year.
Yeah.
So you're taking away a guaranteed win from South Carolina every year. I'm not saying they're guaranteed to lose it, but you're taking away a guaranteed win if they can't go get Charleston Southern and they have to go play, I mean, hell, LSU, right? I mean, in a given year, you're going to be guaranteeing a team like South Carolina one more loss. There's some other out-of-conference stuff that would do the same thing. Those are the two that kind of always stick out to me.
My proposal is, let's move the season up a week. So that week that Florida and Miami are playing this year, let's let everybody kick off then. Let's have the extra bye week. This year you might even have 3 byes in your schedule. That's fine. Doesn't matter. But 2 byes every season, and let's do both. Let's have the extra SEC game, and let's cut the ability to schedule 3 really crappy teams. Like, you have to, you know. So, and the extra bye week will allow for you to play a little bit tougher schedule across the board. I don't know. No one would really be down for that, but I think that would be the best thing. For fans, it gives us an extra week of real college football.
True.
Because more bye weeks in the season, it might lower how good, how many good games there are on a couple of weeks, but you still get a whole extra week of football.
Sure.
Well, and if the extra games
really
are...
Really, too. I mean, because you're adding the extra bye week and starting the season. You know what I'm saying? Like, especially in a year like this, because this year we are getting an extra week.
And if it's an extra conference game, instead of watching these teams play Charleston Southern or Chattanooga or whoever, you're watching Tennessee play Ole Miss.
Should they do away with the middle of the season cake game? Because that to me has been the biggest issue in the SEC for a while, is that weekend before the final weekend, everybody plays trash.
Yeah, so in my deal, that your middle of the season crappy game would actually just become a bye, and then you'd add a good game, but you'd lengthen the whole thing.
Well,
so you get
asking,
a better
but that's what
season
I'm asking.
All over.
Should because when are fans most excited for college football? The beginning of the season, right? Unless your team is really good. The problem lately has been you get to, you know, crunch time in the season with a week or two left, and you've got Auburn playing, you know, Louisiana Monroe.
Alabama played the Citadel.
That's what I'm saying. You know? And it's like, okay, so we've waited all this time, but you guys want a cake game before you play each. I don't know. It feels kind of weird. I almost wonder if we should do, hey, once conference games start, you're all playing nothing but conference games. And I mean, obviously they like to do that because they like homecoming kind of late-ish and in the fall, and you don't want to lose on homecoming, but I mean, does homecoming versus a crappy opponent, is that a better draw than homecoming versus an SEC team? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't understand. They do that. Why does homecoming have to be a win?
Well, they do that because diehards aren't necessarily going to go, but alumni can get a cheaper ticket to come back.
I gotcha.
Which makes sense, and I totally get that, but I don't know that makes the most sense. So I'm wondering if, lengthen the season, add an extra bye week, and maybe you should just play all of your out-of-conference early. Instead of having these weird, like Clemson, South Carolina late in the year is kind of weird, frankly.
What do you mean? I mean, it's the last game.
I know, that's like what I'm saying. It's odd. Like, it's weird to have those out-of-conference games so late to me. Like, to end your season out-of-conference, it always feels strange. Like, what? Like,
I don't know, man. If you grew up in that state and both of those teams have been crappy at points for years, like, sometimes that's all you have left is, can we win that game? And it's not like Tennessee-Vanderbilt. It'll never be the same because they're equals. You know, they hate each other. So it's your one chance to save the season. If Tennessee has a really bad year this year, but they beat Vandy, it's not going to save the season. But it does for those two teams because it's in-state and it counts so much differently.
No, I know. I'm just saying, in my scenario, would it be better for college football? Because that was the issue last year and the year before, is you get that weird weekend where somehow Tennessee-Missouri ends up on CBS 330 and there's just no good football.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's maybe keep those big games, but just say you have to play Power 5 teams from week 4 on.
Okay, Power 5. I don't hate that. And maybe there's an allowance in there, like, you know, you can play a non-Power 5 team up to two games into your conference schedule.
Something, yeah. That works. We'll come back with more. Stick with us right here. It's a Friday edition of 3 and Out. Welcome back to 3 and Out, Friday edition. Appreciate you joining us. If you missed any portion of the show, you can always download the podcast or listen right off of SoundCloud, iTunes, all that good stuff. Make sure you subscribe, and if you enjoy the programming, we'd love a 5-star rating here at Fan Run Radio. I mean, there's tons of good scheduling decisions you can make if all of college football was one entity. It's just not. It's a bunch of conferences that agree on the conferences agree on their internal rules pretty easily, but then conference to conference and how they interact with each other has always just been a complete cluster. I mean, it's been an absolute mess.
Yeah, I don't think anything will change. I don't really think it needs to.
I mean, they used to decide national titles before the bowl games, if that tells you anything.
Yeah. I don't mind that the onus is on the schools, like, to build a schedule that if everything goes to plan, you get rewarded for it. Right?
Yeah.
And if you schedule weak, like I do feel bad for UCF because they've been hit twice now with the your schedule isn't hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like they kind of have the opposite problem. A lot of schools don't want to play them and their conference just isn't good enough. So they're kind of at a, you know, you mentioned having to work with other conferences and other schools. Sometimes that gets tough. The SEC does not have that problem. If you win this league and go undefeated, you're in. If you don't win this league and lose a game that matters, you can still get in because yep. the SEC is so tough. So that's why we were talking about, you know, why right now schedule Oklahoma? You don't need that game for any reason. You just don't need it. I mean, you get a home game from it in a year and a half, and so that's a good gate, probably a sellout. But I would love to know, like, what's the difference between, like, BYU, like a win over BYU in front of 90,000 or a loss to Oklahoma in front of 102,455? Like, which is more valuable long term? I'm going to take an extra win on the schedule where Tennessee is right now.
Definitely now. Can I ask you a different question?
And once you're good, like, it doesn't matter how tough your schedule is if you're in the SEC.
Like, so, like, Kirby Smart and Georgia are just idiots, right? Because he came out and said, we're going to schedule the best teams all the time. Give us the best.
No,
isn't that just stupid?
I think so. Alabama is like, we're going to schedule the worst. Thanks. Like, why should we make this tougher on ourselves?
I mean, it's
because last year, all those injuries they had, they're like, yeah. We're not doing that again. We're going to have another cake game.
It is possible that you lose one game in your whole schedule in the SEC, and if you've played, like, the lowest type of schedule, that you get left out. I mean, that hasn't really happened yet, I guess. But, well, I mean, what happened to Georgia last year? I'm trying to think. They lost LSU, right? And then lost the title game, and they got left out.
Yeah.
So, but if they had beaten, I don't know, if they beat Oklahoma in week three instead of whoever else they beat, like, does it still get them in? Does that get them in? Does it give you another chance to get in, chance to get knocked
out? No, that's the thing. Like, the problem was not their out-of-conference scheduling. The problem was they lost two in the SEC. Like, you can't fix this problem by beating somebody else that's good. Just don't lose to someone else in the league.
And I think you're opening yourself up to the opposite, right?
Right.
Of getting left yes. out because you lost the game
exactly.
to
exactly.
the Oklahoma
yeah,
team
I,
or whoever.
I think Georgia's overreacting. Instead of going out and getting someone else in there that can beat you, why not just beat the teams that are already going to be on your schedule every single year no matter what? If you do that, Georgia, there's no problem.
Yeah, see, last year Georgia had no good out-of-conference game at all.
Correct.
They had been playing, like, Clemson every year, or they played Notre Dame that one year, right? But last year they played Austin Peay, MTSU, UMass, and Georgia Tech. So they just kind of punted the whole thing. So if instead of MTSU, if they had beaten, I don't even know who, like,
Texas. I know they played them in the bowl game, just hypothetical.
Okay, let's say they beat Texas.
I still don't think they're in.
No, because they had two losses.
Right. Like, that's the issue, is their two losses. Not that their out-of-conference wins were bad. It's the losses to LSU and to Bama. Like, that was your problem, Georgia. You lost two games. Sorry.
Well, and even if you wanted to make the case, let's say it was Texas. Even if you want to make the case that last year, if they had beaten Texas, well, they'd get in over Oklahoma because Oklahoma and Texas had the kind of whole loop thing with them, I still would argue, okay, fine, that worked for you under that 2018 hypothetical. But if you had lost to Texas and beaten LSU, you might still have gotten left out.
They would have.
So you're still risking as much as you're gaining at best.
I think you're risking much more.
And I tend to agree with you on that.
I mean, you're taking away a guaranteed win and replacing it with a possible loss.
I mean, hell, if they had just shown up and lost LSU by a field goal instead of by 20, they might have gotten in anyway.
I agree with that. I don't think the problem was their out-of-conference schedule at all. So, good for them, though. Yeah, go get Clemson. Go for it. Whatever.
Oh, I'd love for them to just have years and years of talented teams that never get there.
Right.
I mean, that just...
And they're setting themselves up for that. Like,
inject that into my veins, as the kids say.
As the kid... I think just people in general say that, too. But no, I mean, that's kind of how I feel about Oklahoma. Like, why are we doing that? I mean, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. The SEC is tough enough. It just is. Especially if you're Tennessee.
Right.
Yeah, you already have Alabama.
Like, you're the one school in the conference, well, in the East especially, that's, like, right now guaranteed that loss. Because Georgia has proven they can beat Auburn. Florida has proven they can beat LSU. Everyone else in the East can beat, or at least come close to beating their crossover. You haven't been close in a decade. So,
If I'm Tennessee, the only time I'm scheduling another game like Oklahoma is way out in the future when the Alabama games have been changed, and I know it's a year where our West is going
to
be easy.
Right. Like, I know South Carolina right now looked at their schedule and says, yep, guaranteed a loss to Clemson. But that's at a conference, so it doesn't matter quite as much.
Yeah, they can still make the
exactly
the championship game if
right.
You know, they had a great season.
Like, if you're Tennessee, you're starting minus one in the SEC East race every year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why you would then add an out-of-conference game that's maybe another guarantee. So, I mean, it's two different levels, I suppose. It all goes on to the season total being minus one, but then in conference you're already minus one. I don't know why on earth you would want to welcome in another possible minus one onto your schedule before the season even starts. That's what Georgia's doing. Just doesn't make sense. And Tennessee's not even hunting for a national title. I'm just hunting for a bowl game, and they're thinking that adding a possible loss to the schedule is what's going to get us to a national championship. In what world does that make sense? No, just beat LSU. Beat Alabama. Why are you blaming the out-of-conference schedule when it was your dumbass fake punt that lost you the national championship or the playoff appearance?
Yeah.
Like, that's what lost it for you, Kirby. It wasn't because Georgia Tech's not good enough. No! You lost to a team that got throttled by Clemson. You just weren't good enough. Get better.
Yeah, because if they beat Alabama, they're probably in.
No, they're 100% in.
Yeah.
They're 100% in the playoff, and they're 100% going to get backstroked by Clemson, which I would have loved to see that. So that's a weird move to me. It's a weird move for them to do it hunting a national championship, and it's even weirder for Tennessee to hunting relevancy. Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's dumb.
But I don't think anything changes with the schedule. I mean, look at what they're doing. They're like, well, we're just going to make it easier and easier and easier and easier. We want to be healthy and right by the time the playoff gets here, and I don't need a potential early game against Florida State or USC where I'm losing good players. I need to be able to rest guys and build depth for four games a year, no matter what. I think that's probably the smart move. I mean, that's six bye weeks if you're Alabama.
Troy asked, like, why is the SEC, if you're going to be the best conference, not playing an extra game? Because it's better for the conference to not play an extra conference game. You make more money not playing it than you do playing it. You have a better chance to get two teams in the playoff.
Exactly.
It's
basically like, we don't need to continue to beat each other up. We can have better records at the end of it and then still win our bowl games.
Yeah,
now, there are exceptions, right? Like, Georgia lost to Texas, but I think that was a heartbroken team that just didn't have it. And then Alabama ran into, I don't know what that was. Maybe the best college football game I've ever seen by one team.
We'll come back. Final segment, hour three. Final segment of the week for us here on Three and Out. Well, we tried to talk college football a ton, even though there wasn't much to talk about. And boom, breaking news, Houston. The NCAA, with all their power, has wielded it again. The two players returning for Clemson for the 2019 season that tested positive for PEDs ahead of the title game last year, banned for the regular season. Going to miss the entire year. The appeal denied by the NCAA.
That'll show them.
It was a tight end that had caught five passes and an offensive lineman, a fifth-year senior offensive lineman, who had played in 19 games.
Oh, man, what is Clemson going to do?
Oh, no. Probably just freeze up a couple spots. Can they?
No. Surely to goodness, you don't feed a guy PEDs, he gets caught, and then you get to just take his scholarship away. Otherwise, Jeremy Pruitt is going to be just dumping steroids in all the bad players' cups.
It's true.
Test that guy.
Clemson put out a statement.
I need you to test these 25 guys. Trust me.
I wish Tennessee.
Specifically four, and he like pulls out a little list.
Yeah.
Cardamathum from 47637. It's trace amounts, but it's enough.
It's enough.
They'll be out of here.
Clemson put out a statement. I hope Tennessee starts kind of doing a little more of this when there are good and bad things, because sometimes we don't. I feel like things happen in Tennessee, like you're Wisnator U, and you don't even get the full details of whatever spin the university wants to put on it. Clemson said this: "We're disappointed in the results of the appeal and continue to believe our student athletes did not knowingly ingest any banned substances. The athletic department takes seriously its role in the education, testing, and enforcement of supplement and performance-enhancing substances. We will continue to adhere to best practices with respect to supplement use by student-athletes and support the position of the NCAA in its testing for PEDs. Student-athletes at Clemson have taken 329 tests for PEDs since 2014, and all results have been negative except for the trace amounts," there's that word, "found during the December 2018 test. The two current student athletes were tested prior to the December test including in April and October of 2018, and again in January and February of 2019, and results came back negative for PEDs. So they were tested before and after. Nothing. Clemson maintains a rigorous education and testing program, and all supplements are reviewed with Clemson Athletics, Nutrition, and Sports Medicine, as well as Clemson's Compliance Office, prior to the approval for usage to ensure that no banned substances are included in the products. I mean, what if you just got a product with just a batch that just had something in it it wasn't supposed to have in it?
Isn't that what they were saying?
Yeah.
That, oh, yeah, something spilled into the tub and got mixed in. I would love to know, like, what trace amounts mean. Because some of these chemicals, trace amount is all you need. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't take, I don't know, 50 milligrams of something for it to work. You only need a little bit mixed with this, that, and this, and that, and all of a sudden it gives you a bonus effect. Hate it for Clemson, though. Man, that's devastating news. Oh, wait, no, it's not. Not at all.
Just a bombshell here. Friday.
Hell, they didn't miss those guys against Alabama, did they?
Nope.
Yeah. Not worried about it. Well, we came in with it, and now we go out with it. Rocky Top has been named the number one college football fight song.
All right.
Take that.
Championship.
USA Today's College Football Fan Index.
Put it on the board.
Has named Rocky Top the number one college football fight song. That's really kind of all it says. And then it gives like the history of Rocky Top, and we all know the history of Rocky Top. It's not really the fight song. It's Down the Field, but it's the unofficial official fight song after the band played it in 1972 at the halftime of the Alabama game. How about that? Nailed it.
Hmm.
Is there any other?
I didn't know it's the official state song. Did you know that? 1982. Did you know we had an official state song?
I didn't know. No, I didn't know that. Never really thought about that, I guess.
How about that?
Is there any other song that comes close to Rocky Top?
Were there finalists here? Did it edge out, you know?
Country Homes? Or Roads? Country Homes? Country Roads.
That's not even a fight song. That's just right, their.
I know. I feel like something like that's the only thing that could come close.
What's the most recognizable fight song for you outside of Rocky Top? Like if I say college fight song, let's go. You say Rocky Top, and then what do you say?
I mean, I think there are...
Or just name a school. Like,
probably Georgia, I guess, just because...
No. Shut up.
It's the same as Auburn's. It's the Battle Hymn of the Republic. It's a Yankee song. I don't know why Georgia even uses it. Well, anyways.
But you knew what it was.
Well...
This says
I'm a little
Georgia
bit of a
Tech,
band geek. I know a lot of them, actually.
This says Georgia Tech, Michigan, Notre Dame, and Texas A&M. Okay, I would not put Texas A&M on there. I would put Notre Dame on there.
Okay.
Yeah. I would have said Notre Dame, Michigan. I like Texas A&M's. And
which one? What's Texas A&M's? I think Auburn has a good one, but
yeah,
I don't know the
words.
I can
sing it for you, but I don't know the word. I don't know the name of it.
I think Alabama's is pretty catchy.
Alabama's?
Dun, 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 dun.
I don't know, I just hear it so much. Yeah. Okay, that's enough. It's enough.
It's good.
Stop.
I'm just saying I hate what it means because usually I've just heard it so much over the last decade that I'm very familiar with the song and I think it's kind of catchy.
I probably would have Michigan number two. It's Hail to the Victors. Notre Dame is good.
Notre Dame's is really good.
Ohio State plays a different one after touchdowns now. But there's, I thought was called Across the Field, and it's actually really good. I only know this because a high school my dad used to work for used the same fight.
I like Clemson's. Tiger Rag. I'm sure you know that one too. I know all the fight songs. Thanks to NCAA 14. Please bring it back in the 20.
A&M's is.
I need those fight songs back in my life.
A&M's is. Bum, 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 bum. Bum, bum, bum,
that's like a that's bum, bum, that's an old song bum, bum, itself. Bum,
bum. Yeah, it's a Texas it song. Yeah, it's
yeah, that one is catchy.
Is it the Eyes of Texas or is that a different song?
Eyes of Texas.
Know.
Is that a thing?
No, I don't know. Enjoy the long weekend. We'll talk to you again on Tuesday. Talk Sports is next.
What's Vanderbilt's?
Dr. Daniel Smith here.